It's Will Sean Podcast. The internet cried out for two more blowhards, and they courageously answered that call. Armed with the weapon of wit, each week they're joined by guests to discuss movies, television, pop culture, and anything else that's pissing them off. Take it away, boys.
I'm Will Link.
And I'm Sean David.
And this is Will Sean Podcast?
With much vim and vigor. How you doing, Will?
So we had this lovely guest a few months back. I won't say her name. And in the episode I joked about, I want to be set up. Why doesn't anyone set me up on dates and stuff? Because I'm very willing for this, but nobody knows any women. Anyway, she sends me this email. There's a long email about how I have this friend. She's a wonderful person.
Just out of prison.
Just out of prison. Wonderful person. There are no photos of her online, but she looks exactly like Lea Michele. Do you want her number? She wants to meet you. I'm like, this sounds good to me. And I kind of like the idea of, like, it would be truly a blind date, you know? Like, no photo. And she had seen a photo of me, so I knew this was okay. So I didn't feel so. I'm like, yes, give me your number. So she kept building it up. Call her. You got to call her. Call her. A week goes by. I never heard back from her.
I wasn't meant to be.
Never heard back from her. So you know what? Former guest of the podcast, you failed.
Well, I'll be seeing former guests of the podcast this weekend, so I could discuss it with her.
I'm very curious what happened here. So, you know what?
What if it come back and say, yes, she died?
I'd feel better about myself.
Okay, good.
Okay, and that's what counts. So what's going on in the world of Will Sean Podcast?
Great things. Just wanted to keep reiterating, wanted to welcome any new listeners we may have today. And if you enjoy the podcast, go ahead, check us out on Facebook. That's where we run photos, information, interesting shit. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and, you know, if you like what you hear, subscribe on iTunes, leave a little star rating, comment, tell your friends.
You push one fucking button, and you subscribe. It can't be easier than that, and yet, you people struggle with this concept. So, you know, get on it. Get on it. Come on. Who's the sponsor this week?
Well, Will, it's tax time, and if you're like most Americans, then you hate doing your taxes. Will, do you like doing your taxes?
I hate doing my taxes, Sean.
Well, what if I told you that there was a service where for a small fee, you can watch three specially trained and adorable capuchin monkeys gather your W-2s, 1099s, and K-1s, itemize your deductions, fill out your schedules, and file those taxes. Would you be interested?
That would make the tax experience so much more enjoyable.
Well, fuck you. No such thing exists. Just do your goddamn taxes like everyone else and quit bitching. Brought to you by the fine people at H&R Block.
Ah, well, you know what? It's about time. Actually, I have done my taxes. I've gotten my tax return.
My taxes may be in a state of pre-preparation, but they'll get done.
Okay, you got a few days.
Yeah.
On the show this week, an idiot has a reality show. There's a shock. A woman sleeps in a box, and an actor's ego has affected his career, possibly negatively. So we're going to talk about all that. But first, we are very excited to have with us today, is it adult film star? Is it porn? Like,
it's whatever you want. I don't prefer. Okay, we can go with porn star.
Porn star, Siri.
Hello. Hi.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
You enjoying yourself so far?
Yeah. Yeah. You guys are very entertaining.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. We try.
You both have very good radio voices.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Look at that.
So,
Well, you know what? Each week, you know, we have different guests on, and, you know, we have writers, we have actors, and I always go, like, you know, if it's a band, I go listen to their album. So I do my research. And might I say, the research I had to do before this episode was probably the most enjoyable that I've had to do so
far. I think it nearly killed you, didn't it?
It did. I didn't survive. So I thank you for that alone.
But you're welcome.
There you go.
And I'm sorry that you can't, that I don't do anal yet.
Well, before we get to that, let's take a step back.
I just, I thought maybe somewhere in the back of your head you're like, oh, I'm going to go find some Siri porn. What? No, anal? No, God, anal. This girl sucks.
Cancel the episode of the podcast.
Shut it down. It's not happening. Wait, before we get to all that, let's take a step back. Tell us a little bit about your origin story. Tell us a little bit about...
My origin story.
Coming to Los Angeles. Like, where are you from? How you got
coming
here?
Coming to LA. Well, I'm born in Minnesota, raised in Texas mostly, and lived in Texas, and went to college there, et cetera, until a year ago when I moved to Los Angeles.
Oh, so you're really new to this town.
I came here to do porn, so I've been in porn for a year, lived here for a year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm married. My husband and I moved out here together. He's super supportive of my career, which is amazing. And I knew that I wanted... I'm 24 now. Yeah. I knew that I wanted to be in porn since I was 19 years old, but I was in college, and I was like, I'm going to do this.
Well, you got to have that degree. Have a degree as a backup. You know.
As a backup for my
just
porn
in case
career.
That falls through, that whole porn thing doesn't work out for you.
So it's like, I knew that I wanted to do it, but I also knew that I wasn't ready. Like, in my 19-year-old brain, I was like, I know that I'd be really good at that, and it would be something that, you know, I can do, and I'm sure I will do, but not now, because I don't feel ready. So I put it on a back burner, and it just so happened that timing worked out perfectly, because I met my husband, like, we started making a plan for my career together, I finished college, and then, you know?
Now, once you get here, do you just show up and say... I assume you go to a modeling agency, you have to get into the system, or how do you start that process?
Yeah, generally, girls who aren't from LA and don't already have some sort of connect into Porn Valley, you know, they will have to go to an agent, which is what I did to start out with. I had an agent for my first year, and, you know, that's how I have
built
my career, and now I'm independent, which I personally like better.
Oh, I'd imagine that's going to be the best way to be an independent contractor.
Yeah.
So to
well,
speak.
Isn't every man really just an independent porn star?
I like that.
Now you said that was actually a very mature answer, because I can imagine a lot of people at 19, if they knew they wanted to get into porn, would just be like, "I'm gonna go get into porn." So you had a pretty good head on your shoulders with all this stuff, but well, it sounds like it at least. But like, how did you said at 19? Like, I knew this is what. Like, what was it that you said? Like. I know I'd be good at this. Like, what made you think? Because I'm sure people listening are probably thinking, well, I'm good at having sex with people. But it's got to be, like, another level to why you think you'd be good at that.
And truthfully, when I had this thought in my head, I guess I'd really only had sex with two people in my life.
Even today?
Today, I've had sex with two people right now.
Right.
Two people. I just shoot porn with one person. Just one person.
You're a purist.
I'm a porn purist. No, I was a late bloomer. So I lost my virginity, like, right when I turned 18, about, and then when I was 19. It's a really long, like, weird story that would take me forever to tell, but basically, I was always bisexual growing up. When I lost my virginity, it was to a guy. I was really underwhelmed by the experience. Not his fault at all. I just had expectations that were way too high. So I was like, fuck this, I must be a lesbian. And I didn't do anything for a year until, you know, when I was almost 19. Then I started dating a woman and lost my lesbian virginity to that woman. And I started watching so much, like, lesbian porn at that stage. And that's when it was based off of my watching lesbian porn constantly that I decided I'm going to be in porn. So originally I was like, I'm going to be in lesbian porn.
Which I assume is like a... Okay, got it. Now, one thing about you saying, you know, kind of getting your shit together, knowing, coming out here, one thing I've noticed about you is that you really treat your career like a business person. Like, you're very meticulous and diligent about it. You know, we follow you on Twitter, on your Tumblr, and very impressed by just the way that you... I'm serious. Like, the way that you really, like, wake up and this is your job and this is what you're doing, and it's not just... the videos, it's not just the performing, but it's everything else. It's building a fan base, it's connecting with your fans, it's putting yourself out there, and it's all of those elements together. Can you talk a little bit about, like, your approach to that?
Yeah, it's, well, first of all, you, like, any girl who isn't approaching it like it's a business and taking it really seriously either doesn't want a career or doesn't care enough and will be gone in a little bit
anyway. Like the
girls
that just come out here and say, and do drugs. And
there are plenty of those girls, and they don't, like, they literally, they just want to make some money and leave, and that's cool. But if it's like, I want a career, and I've always known that I wanted one, and in this industry, it's crazy. It's kind of like, you know, the music industry suffered a lot from piracy and has found ways to cope with that better than, you know... Well, and the film industry, too. But porn? No. Like, it's just dying slowly. And so, especially performers who want to actually make a career and stay, you have to be really, really smart about the way that you do things and, you know.
Well, I noticed, like, you really do connect with your fans. Like, they send you questions. You seem to literally answer almost every question. Like Sean said, you're very active on Twitter. And I guess that's what you have to do. You really have to be something that the fans want. You have to make this connection with them to want to see your work.
Right.
Because we live in an age, like you said, mm-hmm. where you can find almost anything online, possibly for free. So mm-hmm. what is it about you that, like, you have to make them want to see you?
Right. So it's like, sure, I have big boobs, I have a cute face, whatever. Like, I'm sure that there's something to look at that a lot of guys would be like, oh, sure, I'll watch that. But guess what? There's a million other girls with a cute face and big boobs that you can find their porn online for free. Yeah. So why should someone watch mine? Well, that's what I'm doing with my website. I'm literally, I'm a people person first and foremost anyway, and I've always been that way. So it's really easy for me to just, it's about the fans. I connect with the fans. You know, I enjoy doing that. I don't even really think of it as work most of the time, so it's, you know, and everything comes after that.
One thing I've noticed also is that you're not afraid to, because you get all these emails, you filter through them, and then you answer the questions that you want to answer. Mm-hmm. You don't shy away from answering some of the really creepy, weird questions,
I love
too.
The creepy, weird ones.
The ones that just kind of cross a line, and I'm like,
Yeah,
like,
some of them are pretty, I can't think of one, but...
I was about to ask if there was one, like, particular creepy one or weird one that jumped to mind... recently or
it's like my mind boggles with all these other, like, because there's so many, honestly. Like, I'd have to go pull up the blog and, like, go through and go, oh wait, here's one.
Well, is there do you get stuff that for you crosses a line, like, well, I'm not gonna deal with this question, or like, is there a line between, I guess, the sexual fantasy of fans and just something that's...
like, I'm a human being. Yeah.
Oh,
like,
well, the good example, and this comes in... versions of this question come in fairly regularly, which is the blatant, can I pay you to have sex with me? I get that a lot on Tumblr.
So do I.
And I'm like, well, that would be... like, I'm not gonna... first of all, that's anonymous. Second of all, are you... like, yeah. Hello? No, I'm not gonna answer that, so... but that's the funniest one that I always ignore. I guess this is kind of a funny one. So I don't remember the porn star's name because I haven't met her, but a fan wrote anonymously today saying, since you're in porn, I know that you're married, so I'm not going to bother you, but can you hook me up with this person? And so, like, the name of a female porn star who I've never met in my life, and I actually had to go look her up because I don't know what she looks like either. I'm like... what do you think that this is, just like some, like, we all know each other automatically?
Yeah. It's like people from Chicago that someone asks, I'm like, oh, I have a friend that lives in New York. Do you know them? I'm like, no, it's a whole fucking different city.
Right. Yeah. I'm like, well, I don't even know who that person is. Sure, let me hook you up with her.
Yeah, well, let me just go to Sardo's and grab her.
So you're a porn star. Like, what makes you a star? What point do you become a porn star? Because let's face it, I could put a video of me fucking my girlfriend up online. I'm not a porn star.
She'd have to call you back first, Will.
Right. And it's become a very loosely used term now. And I actually, even when I was first starting out, you know, because I'm a one-name star, so I had to figure out a way to distinguish myself, especially with the iPhone.
Thanks,
you know,
Steve Jobs.
Yeah, thank you. I had to figure out a way
to Apple, you fucked up with the real Siri.
I had to figure out a way to distinguish myself, so I just made my username, like, on Tumblr, it's Siri Pornstar. On Twitter, it's Siri Pornstar. And some people were like, aren't you new? Are you really a star yet? That's all past now, but for me, I guess it's... I'm not really bothered by people who come in and they're brand new and they use that, because it's like, whatever. Everyone does it now, really.
You said you were trying to kind of identify yourself as that to become that, in a way.
In some ways, it's like a fake it till you make it kind of thing.
Well, it's like in L.A., I'm a writer, I'm a producer, I'm an actor. They may not have done any of those things, but they
but
say
they're
that
aspiring to do that.
Exactly.
So, yeah. I would say definitively, though, no one would debate that you can call yourself a porn star once you have been nominated for or won an award by one of the various organizations that bestows awards upon porn stars.
And you have? You?
Like 3 months in last year, I won the Best Newcomer Award for Miss Free Ones, which is a contest run by the website freeones.com, which is like a
they do
porn
good work.
Aggregator, you know, like search. It's a really cool site, actually.
They're the Huffington Post of porn.
They pretty much are. They're huge, and yeah. So I won that, which was amazing, and
got your name out there, and got...
yeah, it did. It did. It really helped my career early on, and then I was nominated for AVNs, which is like the Oscars of porn.
Yes,
I was nominated for Best New Starlet this year, 2013.
That's nice. Awesome. That's
cool.
That's definitely
very, very cool.
cutting through some of the noise.
Yeah, yeah. It was me and I think 12 other girls. There were 13 nominees total. So it's a small, you know, nice group to be. I'm proud to be in. It's cool.
Nice. That's great. Now I was looking over some of your titles, and there were a lot of titles like "Big Girls Are Sexy" and things like that. And you're sitting here, and although if you go to the Tumblr, you'll notice you're very busty. But I wouldn't call you, like, looking at you, I wouldn't scream "big girl."
Yeah.
And I guess you agree with that sentiment.
I agree with that sentiment. As much as I enjoy both of those scenes that I did, I do, and I've expressed this before, I do disagree with the title of the, because there's two. It's "Big Girls Are Sexy," the original, and "Big Girls Are Sexy 2," the sequel just came out recently.
The much anticipated
sequel. Can't wait for the trilogy to be finished.
So no, I disagree with their choice to title it that way. It has also resulted in distribution companies, which, just like if you go to, you know, Barnes & Noble or whatever, the distributor decides which category that book is going to be in.
Right.
So same thing with porn. The distributor, not the company that makes the DVD, which is New Sensations in this case, they didn't decide to put this in the BBW category, but the distributor did because of its title.
Okay.
Which means I can't even walk into a store in Los Angeles and buy my own DVD because they're like, oh, BBW porn. Which, you know, that's a niche that I don't consider myself to be a part of, so that's why I don't like the title.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, we've talked about this on the show before with, like, different body perceptions mm-hmm. and women have... Because, I mean, if we're calling you big, then there's some women who've got... I mean, I feel sorry for then.
Right.
And is that a big problem in the porn industry, body perception and stuff like that, then?
Well, I will say that it's one of the major reasons that I am so, you know, determined to make a lasting career in this industry is because it's... This actually reminds me of a question that I was asked, I think it was earlier today, it may have been last night, it doesn't matter, but I was asked a question very recently on my blog by a fan who said, you've spoken out against, you know, not wanting to be labeled as a BBW or, you know, voluptuous, you know, BBW meaning larger performer, why is this, and don't you think that you might be doing yourself a disservice or reinforcing what you claim to be fighting in the industry, which is body stereotypes.
Right.
And I think what he meant is, hey, if I'm saying I'm not going to play BBW roles, I'm not going to allow myself to be labeled that way, which is, I do say that all the time. Maybe this guy has the idea that sounds like I'm being judgmental. Like, I have something against women who are BBW performers, which couldn't be farther from the truth. What I want, it's like, in porn, If you're not a size 2-4, you know, very petite, then you either have to have fake tits and then you're like, you know, just the fake tits girl,
right, yeah.
Or you have to be a MILF. And if you're none of those things, if you have a normal shaped body like I do, they're like, oh, well, she's BBW because she's not a teen, she's not a MILF.
Yeah.
She doesn't have fake tits, so she must be BBW, but I'm really just normal size.
So basically, they don't know what to do with natural girls in the porn industry.
They don't know what to do. I've heard fans say, like, we need a category called, like, in-betweeners. Like, they'll come up with terms for it, and I'm like, how about just normal women?
Yeah, I like my women to look like real normal women.
Well, what's the, you know, it's the hot girl in English class syndrome. It's like just the cute girl next door with the glasses on and the hair up in a bun. I can't take credit for this. I think it's Adam Carolla. He talks about how when you go to a strip club, the girls all come up and they're wearing little, like, hot pants, a little top, and 9-inch lucite heels. And mm-hmm. That's not really the fantasy. He goes, he wants to go to a strip club where the girl comes in, like, jeans and a UC Santa Barbara, like, sweatshirt with, like, her hair up and comes like, hey, what's going on? Just starts flirting with you. And, like, that's the stripper. And
yeah.
Then you have to kind of earn the mm-hmm. rest of the body. But
Well, I was going to say, you started off by saying how you don't do anal. So now I have to circle back. The questions I wanted to ask was...
If we had a nickel for every guest that started their interview with that, by the way.
I'm sorry that you can't see me do anal. I know that this must be really disappointing for you.
This interview's over.
Well, you know, because one of the questions we're going to ask were what were things you hadn't done?
Right.
Do you get a lot of pressure from the industry, or I guess maybe even fans, to do that stuff?
Absolutely.
And like why? Well, then why haven't you done anything?
I mean, which is why I made that joke, because it's like, that was just my own little pun that any fans that I, you know, I'm going to say, hey, listen to this podcast when it comes out on my blog. So assuming my fans will go listen to it, they'll get that joke, because that's usually one of the first things. People are like, when are you going to do anal, huh? It's a strategic career decision to hold out on doing things that are considered more hardcore.
Okay.
And things that are considered more hardcore are anything besides normal vaginal sex with a white man.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Having sex with a black man is considered more hardcore than having sex with a white man. Which
you didn't
is,
know this, Will?
How do black men feel about this?
That's accidental racism.
It is a horrible fact of really how racist the porn industry is. And for me, it's I'm going to do those things when I have enough power that I can choose. I can say, I'm going to do this right now, and here's who it's going to be with. Because normally, with, like, I'm really finally starting to get to the point in my career now when I can say which male talent I want to work with. Usually, 99% of the time, especially with new girls, they just tell you who you're going to have sex with in the scene. You don't really have a say in it.
Huh. This is fascinating to me. I didn't think about the racial implications in porn.
Right.
I'd actually, in life, I'd usually dated, like, quote-unquote, boring white women. But recently, I've dated some black women. I don't know what this has to do with anything.
I'm just going to let you keep talking.
I'm just saying.
Oh, look at you. Look how open-minded you are.
I'm just saying, I'd imagine
date
how
some gay men and we'll see.
I imagine it must be then hard for black women if black men are having... Is it a problem for them as well?
Wait, do you mean...
like black women in porn.
Well, the thing with black women in porn is, as far as I understand, they're pretty much expected to do black men.
So they wouldn't have white men having sex with black women?
No, they do.
It's just that with black women, because there's no skin color difference, the industry expects them to have sex with people of all colors.
Okay.
Which the industry does not expect that immediately from white women. It is somewhat of a privilege that white women have. So.
Since I was talking about my sex life briefly there, back to anal. You know, I'm not actually that big a fan of anal sex. I've always been of the mind, if there's a perfectly good vagina there, I would rather have sex with that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just me. And I'm just saying that right now.
Okay, good. So you're gonna start every podcast with, I don't do anal.
I don't do anal. So what are some, like, common misconceptions of the porn industry? Because I'd imagine we have a lot of listeners who probably... I don't know how much porn they watch. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Well, Andrea Marchant is a fiend.
Andrea Marchant watches porn constantly. But besides her, people are probably wondering, like they have preconceived notions about
it.
So what are some misconceptions that you find come up a lot?
The biggest, most pervasive one is that especially for women, that everyone's getting rich, which is very... I mean, it's not like that. It's a job that you have to work very hard at, and most performers still make a perfectly, like, normal...
Yeah,
it's just
amount of money.
A normal life.
Not like buying.
You didn't roll up here.
It's not Boogie Nights anymore.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
You mentioned
male talent on the set and how there are certain men that are considered, you know, better than others and that you can prefer to work with. What are some of the misconceptions? I think, like, every guy thinks, oh, I could do this. I could, you know, what are...
Have
and I've seen you've addressed this a little bit.
Day.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
That's not work.
Like, what makes a male porn star a good male porn star?
There's a lot, and I often kind of feel bad for male talent because their job is... Not that my job isn't hard, because it can be very hard, but they're... It's just, it's very challenging for, like, so let me just put you in the situation.
Please
let's
do.
Say, let's say we're going to film a sex scene. you two.
Yeah.
No, okay.
If we bust.
Well, it's better to say if you're going to do one with just another girl, because that's more awkward. So let's say you and I are going to film a sex scene.
Right.
And there's five people on the crew because there's two cameras, there's like a lighting guy standing around, there's sound guy standing around, and there's a director standing there.
And some dude's friend that's just on the set.
Yeah, and some guy who just fucking brought his friend who's like eating a sandwich in the corner staring at your cock. Now, you're supposed to get your cock hard, you're supposed to keep it that way, and what if I'm the kind of female performer that, like, I'm like, well, I'm not going to do anything I'm not directly being paid to do, so even though I'm going to fuck you when the camera's on, between takes, when you're trying to keep it hard still, I'm just going to sit here and stare at you with everyone
and
else.
And just text, yeah.
Like, how awkward is that? And then imagine maybe I have a horrible attitude about it, which happens sometimes, I've heard stories. It can be a lot to deal with, you know?
I could barely get hard to masturbate, so this sounds like a nightmare.
And then imagine
and
then
that... And then you'd get anxiety over...
Right.
Right, and now, it's a feedback loop.
Now imagine that, like, you've done 99% of the fucking, and all they want is your cum shot. So you have the girl, like, on her knees in front of you, like, you're going to cum on her face or on her boobs or something, and now you have the five guys, like, even closer. They're, like, within 3 feet of you, and they're all just fucking staring, like, when are you gonna come, dude? And you're getting nervous because you're like, you're all looking at me, I don't like this. And you take 10 minutes, and you have to sit there, like, jacking off under this girl's face, trying to come for 10 minutes, and it doesn't happen, and then everyone gets pissed at you.
Or, conversely, what happens if 2 minutes into it, he just comes and...
So what happens if you start fucking the girl, and you're like, oh, and then you just freak out and come? Well, two things, possibly... You'd be okay if you can just get hard immediately and keep fucking the girl and finish the scene and with a normal cum shot at the end. Then you're fine. If you're just like, I need to recuperate for 30 minutes, you know, then people are going to be annoyed.
Yeah,
but you'll still be fine if you can finish a scene. If you're just like, oh shit, I can't, like, you can't get it up because, like, you're embarrassed or I don't know, then you'd probably never be hired again.
I'm gonna.
This sounds like a nightmare.
I was gonna say, you want to know what the male porn star is? A really thankless job. And I know that sounds weird because they're having sex with beautiful women and getting paid for it. But at the same time, there's all this pressure, and it's like, I mean,
you're lucky if you see their face.
Yeah, you don't really know.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you're a real connoisseur of
unless
porn,
you're
you
a,
probably
you
don't
know
their names.
Right.
Whereas there are female porn stars over the years. Like, whether it's a Jenna Jameson, Sasha Grey, their names
right.
are just in the zeitgeist, and people
right.
hear about it constantly. Ah.
So there goes that
That's
career option.
I know.
So,
I was all set to sign up tonight, but...
This is the reason why you see, like, the same 15 men in
right.
porn over and over and over again with the major companies, because companies find a guy that works well and does the job. They're like, I'm not going to
take a
gamble on anyone else
It's
now.
A business. It's time and money,
right.
and when you find something that works, you don't want to fuck with it, and these are...
Mm-hmm.
It's a multi-billion-dollar industry, and there's plenty of guys out there with dicks that want to have sex on camera,
yeah.
and if this guy's not working... There's plenty of other ones, so,
mm-hmm.
okay.
Now, I noticed also you were recently in a, I guess, a horror film.
Yeah.
Ooga Booga.
Ooga Booga.
Ooga Booga. Say it again.
I say, well, I think it's, you know, it's fun to say Ooga Booga, but, like, it's, I have a hard time saying that, so usually I just say Ooga Booga.
Ooga Booga.
Which sounds real Texan.
Yeah.
Ooga Booga.
I'm also saying it with that Long Island accent.
Well, let me do it with my pure accentless Los Angeles dialect. Ooga Booga.
That's what we're going with.
I like that.
So I guess, what is this film about? Like, it's, I guess it's,
awesome.
It's a more mainstream
Yeah,
film. It's
yeah.
Not, yeah, so what is it?
It's like a campy, you know, horror film, which is, it's done by Charles Band, and I actually saw one of his movies in high school and was like, totally, like, Evil Bong, and it was so funny. When I got to audition for that, I was like, oh, what? Really? The guy who did Evil Bong? Yeah.
Well, you're the only person that's ever heard of it.
I know. It's coming out on Criterion Collection next
yeah,
month.
Yeah, they're doing a two-disc Blu-ray with commentary tracks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I actually was another porn star friend of mine who... You know, she was contacted to do that, and she couldn't. So she was like, hey, Siri, you want to be in this horror movie? And I was like, oh, my God, yeah.
It was just by kind of happenstance.
It was kind of happenstance, which is the coolest thing, because now it's like, it's totally, you know, it's doing really well.
I mean, I know you said your dream was, I mean, your goal and your dream was to be a porn star, but, I mean, do you
right.
have a desire to get into more mainstream work? Like, say, I mentioned Sasha Grey before, and, you know, she
plays
on Entourage and horror movies and stuff like that. Do you have a desire to do something like that down the line?
It's, I mean, when things fall into my lap like this did, I am completely game to go for it, and I'll, you know, I believe that I can act fairly well, so I'll always be down to do that kind of thing. But I'm never gonna just like hop the train to Hollywood and just never look back like as if porn was a stepping stone, because it's not.
Okay.
It's always gonna remain the priority, and I'm always going to put priority on my porn career over other things. But
if it could lead to something fun.
Yeah,
well,
of course.
Okay, so this is maybe...
And those things only, get me more exposure in the end, so...
Sure. Well, this kind of maybe is jumping a little too far in the future, but, eventually would you maybe want to... And I'm thinking of someone like Joanna Angel, who I think has created a fantastic niche for herself.
She's
and done it
amazing.
Very and also smartly.
My kind of look I like, but can never get.
And
so
raised
like
Orthodox, raised Orthodox Jewish, so yeah on that. Sorry, I'm a fan of hers.
So am I.
Would you want to, going back to the idea of just these natural girls, create or produce your own films, direct maybe one day, and make a brand for yourself? That
I'm already, laying the groundwork for that kind of thing. I absolutely. I've always intended to do my own production at some point, and like Joanna Angel is an inspiration of mine for that. So is like Belladonna with Evil Angel. And there's a whole handful,
But... And these are all, like, if the people don't know, these are all, like, kind of, like, more niche kind of...
It's the type of material they do is niche. It tends to be very extreme in many ways, but also they've found... It's not just the porn itself. They've created almost a lifestyle community around people that are into this. And it gives them, basically, unlimited power within the field to create the content, market it, and make more money off of it,
and
honestly.
Joanna Angel has more, like, of a punk, for lack of a better word, look.
Or alt,
alt
sometimes
look.
Is
and
it.
Also what
they'll
think,
usually call it alt in the porn industry. Anyone with tattoos and,
and like half their hair missing, which I don't get that look, but whatever.
I'm fine with all of this.
The Skrillex.
No, thanks.
It's become very
popular. Do I look like a Skrillex guy?
What was that?
Do I look like a Skrillex
you
guy?
You totally do.
Uh-huh.
Totally.
Before we move on to some of the pop culture topics, I want to ask one more question, because... back in the last election, there was this whole, like, and we talked about it on the podcast, there was this whole, like, kind of bullshit, like, condom porn law.
Oh,
has that gone into effect yet? Is that, like,
it's
something?
It's being contested. So it's kind of in limbo because it's being contested. But technically, people are not supposed to be shooting porn without using condoms. However, the law, even if it were completely, this is the law now, it's like completely unenforceable.
They don't know
when or where people are shooting porn. What are you going to go do? Knock on every door and then check for condoms? It doesn't make sense.
I want that job. I want the job of the condom checker to go around. But no, I thought that was law. It was a law. If you don't know, there was a law that was. I don't know how this got voted in here in Los Angeles or whatever. That porn.
Well, the way that it was phrased on the ballot, like when I was voting, I was like, you know what? I have to admit, the way that it was phrased on the ballot, if you're just your average middle class like mom. Someone who doesn't work in the porn industry, it's like very reasonable sounding. It was like to require that pornographers and adult talent wear condoms to keep themselves safe.
It's like it's for your safety. It's so
it's how it is
phrased. Yeah.
But actually, it's completely the opposite. It's
because it dissuades testing.
Not only that, but it's already hard enough if I'm on set and I'm having a sex scene, and in order to get the amount of footage we need, I have to have sex with the guy for 2 hours straight.
Jeez.
And his penis is larger than average, which, can hurt after 2 hours straight. If the guy's wearing a condom and then you add in the friction that a condom, it's like, oh no, like... A lot of people would work a lot less. It would hurt the industry in many ways, and it would physically hurt people.
And I just don't understand how you can tell two consenting adults they can't have unprotected sex if they want to. I mean, that's...
Welcome
according
to my childhood.
According to this law, actually, if I were to film a sex scene with my husband in my house, I would need to get a permit to film it in my house, and I would need to require my husband to wear a condom.
This is amazing. This is amazing.
That's another thing that's keeping you out of porn, Will.
This condom. I will not do any more porn until this law is stricken. That is the same. I know some people say I'm not going to get married until gay people get married. Well, I'm not going to do porn until this condom law is stricken down. Struck down. So before we move on to topics, we've already talked about like your Tumblr and stuff, because it's really good. You answer a lot of great questions and you really connect with the fans. Why don't you give some plugs where people can find you?
Well, first
I'm
going to plug Ooga Booga, because I want everyone to go watch that. It's in Redbox. Sweet.
Yes.
Like any Redbox. I've checked them all. I was in Texas. I was like, oh, there's a Redbox. Let me check it. And they were all out of stock. And I was like, fuck yeah, people are watching it. So go to Redbox, get Ooga Booga. Or you can get it at Grindhouse Flicks, flicks with an X.com. and watch it streaming there. So there's my plug for Ooga Booga. Of my own stuff, I don't have much to plug at the moment besides my website, SiriPornStar.com. You know, Twitter, I keep everyone up to date on what I'm doing there. But
and it's at SiriPornStar.
Yes, at SiriPornStar.
And look, good
follow me on Instagram too.
Yes,
SiriPornStar, because my account got deleted last week, and I just had to make a new one. So I'm like, oh, where are all my followers?
Yeah, I'll ask you about that later. That was a little weird.
And if you're a good listener of the podcast, you have probably already been to Siri's Tumblr and Twitter, because we've put the links up on our Facebook page. And if you're a male listener of
browse
the podcast,
while you listen,
you've probably been there multiple
and
times.
And if you're a female listener, too, you know, do a little research and discover the wide world of Siri.
Siri,
yay!
Yes.
I've been told that I'm a very couple and female-friendly porn star, which is great also, because that was one of my goals.
You're also a very podcast-friendly.
Oh, yay.
So we want to get your take on some of the topics of the week, pop culture topics.
Okay.
Let's have some fun here.
I'm excited.
Remember the last Olympics, everybody?
Yes.
Like it was last summer.
I was like, wait, how long ago was this?
What year
like,
is it?
The one that just happened? Because that was pretty recent.
Ryan Lochte.
Yes.
He was a champion gold medal swimmer. Well, he's got a new reality show called What Would Ryan Lochte Do?
What?
Yes.
What would he do? I don't know.
Well, apparently it's act like a moron. Because I have seen the commercial of this, and he acts exactly like the character Zoolander. Like, he's saying things, he's talking about, like, there's a scene of him outside, like, Pink's hot dog, like, with a hot dog they named after him, and he's, like, rambling on incoherently, and he's playing, like, shirtless football with all these other, like, really attractive guys, because Ryan Lochte's a good-looking man. Anyway, this show looks like a nightmare, and he has a catchphrase in it, too, which is, Ja, that is his catchphrase.
That's a catchphrase?
Apparently so. He goes, Ja.
Is he Jamaican now?
He's the whitest man in white man town.
And I feel
just
like
a meathead.
Now, Siri, are you familiar? You've seen him. Like, you know what he looks like.
Yeah.
Would you watch this show? Because I know for a fact E! Needs this to be a hit. Because all they have is the Kardashians. And they've been squeezing so much blood out of this stone or whatever. I mean, Would you watch a reality show about an Olympic gold medalist swimmer who's a moron?
No. No. No.
Do you watch any reality TV?
I watch Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
Oh, how is that?
I like it. It's a total guilty pleasure of mine. My husband actually got me into it.
Oh. Really?
Oh, yeah.
Why did he start watching it?
I didn't even own a TV when we met. And when we moved in together, he's like, oh, I have Real Housewives recorded, and I'm like, what? You watched that? And he's like, yeah, I started watching it a while back, and it's really, so hey,
so
you know,
you're watching something real.
And now I'm fucking addicted to it. Like I love it more than he does now.
You're part of the problem.
Now he puts it on, and I'm like,
it's like catnip,
and he's like, you know, kind of half paying attention to doing other shit. But no, I'm totally into it. I don't know why. It is really entertaining.
Who are the Vanderpumps? Because we've had people on here talk about the Vanderpumps. They have something to do with the
Lisa
Real
Vanderpump is the second most normal, like, down to earth. No, maybe the first. I don't know. I can never decide. The reason, probably the most entertaining reason that I watch this show is because I'm constantly observing them trying to figure out who's like the most normal person out of this group.
When the cameras
are
off?
It switches around, you know? Even when they're on, when they're off. I mean, I feel like everyone pretty much, the scenarios are scripted, but everyone seems to stay true to who they are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know that they would act 100% that different with the camera off. Well, I feel like they're
you said the scenarios are scripted, and I think it's funny because, you know, you watch like something like the Kardashians, and I've been forced to for various reasons. And you see,
forced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Forced.
I'll get into that off
the
air. But there are moments that it's like, well, I mean, they clearly, how did they get the other end of that phone call if they didn't know it was going to be important? So, I mean, it's like the most
right.
staged stuff.
It is.
Now, do you think women, as a woman, do you think women will tune into the What Would Ryan Lochte Do show? Because
I mean,
he's a handsome guy. But I mean, his
there's
stupidity's
not enough there
gotta...
to attract me, honestly. Like, I might watch it for 5 minutes to like figure out what the hell is this and laugh at it. But...
Do you think the common woman would?
Someone that's not attracted to brains.
I don't know, because I feel like the common woman will probably enjoy watching Real Housewives of Beverly Hills more. And like, I'm not gonna give up my RHOBH time to go watch an Olympic swimmer. I don't care.
Eat Pink's hot dogs and play shirtless football.
Hell no, no. I
guess a shirtless guy, that's something you see enough anyway.
Right. And yeah. I enjoy my TV show. Like, there are TV shows that I'm loyal to right now, and I just don't have space for it anymore. So, no. Ryan Lochte can just suck it.
I am almost glad when shows are getting into their last season. Like, I'm glad, like, this summer break. Because
you're like, oh, I have room for something else.
Exactly. Like,
I made an executive decision. I broke this to Will yesterday. He didn't take it very well. Not watching Walking Dead next season. I'm done with it.
Aw.
I know.
I haven't watched it for any season. Well, so yeah, I don't know exactly how disappointing this news might be, but...
You should jump on the bandwagon, and you should fucking stay on it, because it's a good show. It's an exciting, fun show. There's got to be shows you're watching that are worse than Walking Dead.
No. Everything I watch is of the utmost quality and meets the highest ethical, moral, and entertainment standards of television.
Sean, you and me should get a reality show.
I think it's a good
reality show. What would that be like?
That would be me reading... And scribbling in a legal pad. And
for hours.
Yeah, and occasionally getting into awkward conversations with people.
Okay.
That's my life.
That's exciting.
And looking up series clips on the internet.
There we go.
There we go. That's my reality show.
I guess
people would probably watch that.
Mine would be, I putter a lot in my apartment.
Cleaning, scrubbing.
Cleaning. I go to Sardo's. I sit there. I drink too much. I fail at hitting on women. This would be a great reality show. The people would get behind me in my puttering.
I think it would only be fun if I could go and just get into aggressive conversations with people, like you've seen me do, where I just I fuck with people when they don't realize it.
We liquor you up and have you say to women, you'll know when I've had enough when there's a baby inside you, things like that.
Oh, yeah. That's
I don't know what you're talking about.
That's a creepy line. I like that.
Oh, I got a whole bunch of creepy lines. Ooh. We can also talk off air.
Well, speaking of things that might be creepy, the actress Tilda Swinton, who I think is phenomenal.
She's wonderful.
She's a brilliant actress. She's doing this art project called The Maybe. And in this, it's an installation at... I think it's in San Francisco.
No, it's New York. I believe it's
New York. I think it's actually going to be at various modern museum of arts around the country, where she's just going to sleep in a glass box, and you go and you watch her sleep.
And you watch Tilda Swinton sleep. Oh my God!
Which she has like a little pillow and a mattress and like a cup of tea.
Okay, what I don't understand about this is how is she just going to guaranteed be sleeping? Like,
a
museum is open all day.
I think she does. She'll come for a 12 or 24-hour stint, and she just shows up. They let her in her box. I don't even know if she spends the night there.
Well, why would you spend there? No patrons there at the night.
That's part of the craziness of the art. That's the commitment to the bit.
She is a great actress. I mean, she could fake sleeping, I'm sure. Very pretty good for
this is so strange.
See, if Tilda Swinton wanted to be really weird, fuck New York, fuck San Francisco, fuck L.A. You go to, like, Moline, you know, or just Iowa, somewhere
you know
in the middle
what?
Of fucking nowhere, and do it there.
I think she got the idea for this from an episode of the Disney Channel, Even Stevens.
Did
explain?
With Shia LaBeouf. There was an episode, I used to love that show, oh my God. There's an episode where Shia LaBeouf's character, there's like a contest to see who can sleep in like this window of a furniture store. And so it's basically sleeping in a glass box, and everyone can walk by and watch you sleep. And I think it's like you win a bed or something stupid at the end, but like that's the only thing that I think of when I think of Tilda Swinton sleeping in a box. I'm like, I think of Shia LaBeouf and even Stevens with his little fro.
So maybe Tilda Swinton is trying to win a bed. She can't get a bed.
Poor girl.
I think secretly it's totally not an art project. She's just like, I will get $10 million if I sleep in this box.
Fuck that. She's smart. She knows how to spend the night in New York City without paying for a hotel. You know how expensive New York City is? That's what's going on to you,
and
Tilda.
Think of how many fucking hotels in New York City look like a modern art museum anyway. They're like really...
I remember the first time I went to the Standard Hotel, my friend was staying there. There's like a toilet in the middle of the hotel room. Like,
right.
I don't understand, like, where do I poop? Like, why do you all need to see me with the toilet in the middle of the room?
It's like a jail cell.
It's really weird.
Do you think what she's doing is art?
I mean, modern art is so open to interpretation yeah. anyway. But I suppose it is, just in the sense that, I mean, come on, art is supposed to get people talking about... A lot of art is just about making people wonder, is this art, it seems. So, I mean, in that respect, so, sure, it's art. Is Tilda Swinton, I don't know, she's pretty crazy.
If she was doing it like, here in L.A., would you go see it? Would you go out of your way to see it?
I wouldn't really go out of my way. I mean, if, like, if, you know... If someone was really wanted to go and they were like, I really want to go to this, will you go with me? And it fell into a time and day that was, you know,
well, it's random. It's not,
me,
she just shows
then I
up.
Would go.
So, I,
well, if you got word, if someone called you and said, Sean, she's here, Tilda's here, would you, like, I'm dropping, I'm going, would you go?
Yes.
I think I would too. But I think I'd go because I like her as an actress, not because I have a desire to see someone sleep. I don't know. I don't know.
I think that's why everyone would go, honestly. Like, I don't know.
So is this statement?
You know what you do? You want to make it even better?
Swinton in person.
Write your cell phone number on a piece of paper, hold it up, be like, text me, Tilda. And then you start texting Tilda Swinton while she's in the box and see if she does it.
Wait, so can you, like, walk directly up to the box? Because I would, like, want to walk up to the box.
I don't know how close you can get.
Put my phone up to it.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty good. I want...
All right, now we all want to see Tilda Swinton in the box. Well, there's... I heard about this, and I don't know if it's true or not.
Ah, see? Like, this is probably the whole point of it. She wants people to be like, ooh...
Talking about it on the Will Sean podcast? Yeah, that was her whole goal.
Yeah,
we need to talk about Tilda Swinton, who starred, and we need to talk about Kevin. Well, that was a bad joke. I heard about this. Don't know if it's true. There's an installation at SF MoMA in San Francisco that's a phone... And it's just in there, and occasionally the phone rings, and you pick it up, and Yoko Ono's on the other end. And Yoko Ono will randomly call this phone that's in SF MoMA. I could be completely making that up, but I feel like it's true.
That's why I thought San Francisco.
Right. So,
that's along the same lines, because it's a celebrity. You don't know when it's going to happen. Really, you have to assume that the only reason people would go is because they might have a connection to this celebrity in some way.
How many people you think pick up that phone and be like, you ruined the beat? Like, you think they say obnoxious
things? Oh, my God.
Oh, they're museum papers.
They probably want to, but the second they hear Yoko's voice on the other end, I think most people just...
Yeah.
And then hang it up.
She, like, primal screams into the phone or something. Like, what is that conversation?
I don't concern myself with what Yoko Ono's doing on a daily basis.
I think about Yoko Ono at least 5 times a day.
Well,
What are you doing while you're thinking about her, huh?
nothing that we're going to talk about
free
here.
Free one clips, Yoko Ono.
Yeah. I'm gonna go to all the free porn sites. I'm gonna search Yoko Ono.
There probably is a porn star named Yoko Ono.
I'm gonna check her out. In addition to
like
Siri,
her work.
In addition to Siri, go check out the porn work of Yoko Ono when you're done listening to this podcast. And now you're gonna have fans contacting your Tumblr be like, when are you gonna do some scenes with Yoko Ono? Did you see the movie Django Unchained?
I did.
How did you like it?
I loved it.
I loved it too. Sean.
I loved it.
We're all on the same page. Great fucking movie. Quentin Tarantino. There are few filmmakers better than him working today. His films have such energy, such originality. Even though he's kind of doing things, taking things from the past in film, but making them new again. Mm-hmm. And Will Smith was originally supposed to be Django. He wrote the role.
I don't like that.
You didn't like that?
I don't like that.
His idea was, I'm going to give this role to Will Smith, and this is, and I guess, again, talking about black men on this podcast, we're going to take the least scary black guy, the black guy that white people, like, have embraced, like, as...
I don't think any black man has been embraced by white people as well.
I mean, Will Smith, huge box office star. Right. He's like the black person that white people are comfortable with.
Everyone's mom loves Will Smith.
Right, because he's not scary.
But every white person's mom is like, oh, that Will Smith, he's a nice man.
Yeah.
Exactly. So he wanted to make Will Smith Django, this guy who's going around killing white people and people cheering. And he thought it'd be...
Yeah,
it's interesting. So he offered this to Will Smith, and Will Smith turned him down, as you know, because you've seen the movie, and Jamie Foxx is in it. But this is why he did an interview this past week where he explained why he turned it down, and this pissed me off. He said Django wasn't the lead, so it was like, I needed to be the lead. The other character was the lead. Then he went on to complain, spoiler alert, but you should have seen the fucking movie by now, that Christoph Waltz's character is the one who kills, I guess, the biggest of the villains in the movie. And he's like, well, I need to kill the villain. So basically, Will Smith, what you're telling us, you decided not to work with the great Quentin Tarantino because of your ego, because you couldn't just be part of a great project. You needed to be the lead, which, by the way, Django is the fucking lead of the movie because it's called Django Unchained. It's about his story, getting his wife back. It's not about... It's not
Dr. Hans and Landa.
Yeah, it's not called Dr. King Schultz or whatever his name was. It's not the Calvin Candy story. It was Django Unchained. So your ego blew it, and you want to know what you decided to do instead of work with Quentin Tarantino? You did an M. Night Shyamalan film with your wiener kid that's coming out in June. Oh, so that's why you, Will Smith, are the enemy of the podcast. Fuck you. You had your opportunity to do some interesting work with a great filmmaker, and you blew it. Go fuck yourself. Bah. I'm really bothered by this. I don't know why he... I mean, did he think he's better than Quentin Tarantino? Like, he thought he had to be the star? What do you think went down here, Sean?
It's same thing. I mean, his ego just got in the way, and Will Smith has a way of doing Will Smith. The man fucking renamed the Millennium the Willennium. That's how big his ego is. Remember that? How's that working out for you, Will?
Oh, I remember that. Oh, yeah. Man.
So,
he's doing an M. Night Shyamalan film. He's doing this film where him and his son get stranded on a planet, a mysterious planet that turns out to be Earth in the future.
Bum, what? Bum, bum.
Another M. Night twist.
And they're getting chased by CGI monsters.
So that was better than being in Django?
Well, you haven't seen this movie yet. It could make your end of the year best of list.
I don't think that's going to happen.
We'll see.
I don't know. I just, I feel like that's a weird career move, and I feel like if you keep doing, I feel like that's like a Harrison Ford move. And Harrison Ford, I think, has become somewhat irrelevant as an actor because he had an opportunity to be, he was offered the Michael Douglas part in Traffic, and he turned it down because, you know, he's Harrison Ford, and it's a small supporting part. But I feel like you're better off working with great filmmakers and sustaining a career, because one day Will Smith isn't going to be putting asses in the seat, and that day might come when he stars in an M. Night Shyamalan film.
So we're all going opening weekend is what you're saying.
We're all
going
to be at After Earth, the new Will Smith film, opening weekend. Siri, you want to join us?
Yeah, yeah, I would love to.
Go to the Arclight. We'll go Midnight
Street.
I love
Will Smith. He's such a nice man.
He's good. He's fine. He's got his audience.
After, he felt, yeah, understandably felt the need he's to walk her, back my word.
He's her godfather.
No,
it's yours.
Oh, well, he could be. I he'd be a cool godfather.
You know what? I say fuck sure. you to him with love, because I want, because I think he's actually a pretty good actor.
You want ID4 too.
He's got a lot of talent, so I agree. Fuck him. Because I would have liked to see him in that role. I think in the end I would have probably still chosen Jamie Foxx over him if there were like two versions of the movie I could watch.
But if he had just been cast in it, you probably would have just been like, oh, this is great.
Yeah, I would have still gone to see the film. Probably would have still... Yeah. Of course I would have still enjoyed it. It's a wonderful film, but...
It's for the kids.
You know, it's just... It's his loss, you know? It's like, fine. Have an ego. Look what you missed out on, Will.
Yeah. Think you're better than me. I'm the real
Got
Will.
To miss hanging out with coked-out Quentin Tarantino. Yeah, making a movie in the South.
I feel like he's also one of those people when Tarantino asks you to do something, you do it. Like, assuming that your schedule, like, you're not contractually
Unless you're Will Smith.
Unless you're Will Smith. But I mean, like, if... Well, this is an obvious question, but if Quentin Tarantino called you and said, I love your work, be in this movie, you would have to drop everything to do it, because he's QT.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course I would. Whew.
As would I. Sean, I know.
And anyone else in the world.
I'd think about it. Now, if Sean Levy called me and wanted me to be in his film.
Is he Night of the Museum? Is
that yeah.
Yeah. Well, speaking of films, I want to just... end the podcast on kind of a down note.
I love that. That's great.
I know.
We bring them in with laughter and leave them with tears.
Well, usually we try to end with something extra funny and weird, but unfortunately last week we had recorded the episode the day before we heard Roger Ebert died. And Roger Ebert was a personal hero of mine, and I believe yours as well, Sean. He's yes. a brilliant film critic, and as a kid, me and my dad would watch Siskel and Ebert every weekend. And the reviews that he would talk about, it would kind of inspire us to go out and see these new movies that we might not have heard about otherwise. And I really think reading Ebert's reviews and his great movies list and stuff like that exposed me to so many amazing films and really influenced my love of film.
Yeah, I also, you know, he put out these great movie essays, and these are the movies that you, you know, quote-unquote, have to see, and for the most part, you have to see most of these films. But he wasn't just a film critic. He was an old-school newspaper man that managed to build himself a career all the way into the 21st century. For the last, like, 8 years, he basically had no lower jaw, so he communicated almost exclusively through blogs and Twitter.
And he wrote more than ever.
Yeah, he reviewed over 300 movies last year, wrote full essays on each. But it wasn't just that he was a film critic, because that's, you know, almost reductive. He was, in many ways, like a gentle philosopher of life. The way he approached movies, he approached them very much on their own terms. He wasn't out to excoriate or rip anyone to shreds. He would approach a movie and say, what is this movie setting out to do? Did it succeed at that? And he would, I think it's a great lesson. You kind of have to approach things on its own terms. You can't have unrealistic expectations, but you have to be tough but fair. But, you know, as after he died, all these eulogies and people writing essays, the amount of impact he had on people's lives, even outside of just film criticism, was astounding. And, you know, he'll be missed.
I mean, I knew he had impacted my life, but reading all the things afterwards, I mean, I was tearing up. I got kind of emotional about it. And I like what you said about how he judged things on his own terms. And he had that great quote, "It's not what a movie is about, but how it is about it."
Yeah, and then the second quote he had that I loved is,
"That's good.
A good movie is never long enough, and a bad movie is never short enough. a bad movie is always too long, and a good movie is never long enough."
And the other thing, so many, like, he wasn't just a critic, but he championed small films. Like, I remember, like a movie like Hoop Dreams, a documentary back in the day, like, he would just go on and on about it, almost berating the public to go see this thing. And there were, back in the day, like, he championed Martin Scorsese when he was nobody, you know? Spike Lee would Do the Right Thing. You know, these are films that, you know, a lot of critics were a little afraid of that movie because it's
scary black people.
Yeah, exactly. Back to the scary black people. But it deals with racial tensions in a very honest way. And Ebert was a big champion of that film. And I never saw so many artists, the people that he actually critiqued when he died, come out and talk about him in such a loving way.
So.
And he also evolved. Like, he brought film criticism to television. And then he was one of the early adopters of the internet, too. And Twitter, you know. I mean, he had like 800,000 Twitter followers.
Almost as many as we have.
I know.
Yeah. You're almost at 800,000, aren't you, Siri?
Oh, I'm right there. I'm right on the edge.
You're verified. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you and Bieber neck and neck.
Yeah. Honestly, totally.
Try to bring this Ebert thing a little bit back to you. Do people, are there critics for porn? Are there porn critics?
There are.
Do they look at a porn and say, it's not what a porn is about, but how it is about it? Like how do they judge? Like,
porn critics, well, it's such a wide, there aren't so many, like, professional porn critics.
What I would imagine not.
You should look up, there's a porn journalist, he's his own title, America's beloved porn journalist. His name is Graham Ponante.
His Christian
we're
name.
Friends, and, like, you know, he's interviewed me a couple times, and he has his own blog. He writes for Fleshbot, I believe. He writes for a couple sites. In my opinion, he's the best critic of porn because
the Ebert of porn.
He does kind of approach it in that Ebertian. Can that be a word now? Yeah. In that way,
yeah.
It's like looking at this in the scope of what it is and what it's trying to accomplish. And I read reviews of porn, you know. And there are enough of them that are just like, well, I don't like this porn because it's not like this thing from 1995.
You know, where's the bush?
Just for example. Just for example. So, no, Graham's very fair, and he's a smart fellow anyway. Nice. So,
does he have a two cocks up system? Is that how he rates things?
I don't know if he has. I love that. I don't remember what he uses as far as a rating system, or if he really has one. I remember his articles, which are always very entertaining and well written.
I would imagine to be a porn
two
review, you have to, yeah, you gotta have that. A little, there's gotta be a little bit of humor in there. You can't,
yeah,
like, start going, breaking things apart based on, like, semiotics and,
right,
you know, shot,
well,
selection and all that.
His name is actually an anagram of porn magnate.
Ah.
How funny is that?
Clever.
Aha. Mm. I thought that was really funny.
Mm. Before we leave, and you mentioned that Ebert wrote about life just as well in his memoir, Life Itself, is a phenomenal read. And I'm just going to end. I'm just going to end with saying the thing that's written on the back of the book real quick, which I think is a really kind of beautiful way to look at life. I believe that if, at the end, according to our abilities, we have done something to make others a little happier and something to make ourselves a little happier, that is about the best we can do. To make others less happy is a crime. To make ourselves unhappy is where all crime starts. We must try to contribute joy to the world. That is true no matter what our problem, our health, our circumstance. We must try. I didn't always know this, and I'm happy I lived long enough to find out. So we
That's
end.
A wonderful quote.
It's fantastic. And I think it's that. Really, it shows that a man who went through so much, like inability to talk in the last year, he had a very positive outlook on life and the way life should be led. So.
Yeah.
And on that note.
On that note,
see, that's a happy note.
It is a happy note. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Siri,
thank
who
you
makes
for inviting
people
me.
Happy every single day.
Yay! do what I can.
Right before we leave again. Plug one more time. Your Twitter, tell us everything, where they can find you.
We got my website, siripornstar.com, Twitter, @siripornstar, Instagram, help me build back up my followers because my account got deleted, @siripornstar there as well. Go see Ooga Booga, get it from a red box. Yeah.
Awesome.
Sean, Boom. Plug your shit.
You can follow me at Twitter @TheSeanDavid, also at Instagram, where I also put up very well-done pictures, if I may say so. You can buy my book, my collection of short stories, on Amazon, Amazon Kindle, Triumvirs, Triumvirs. Everyone who's read it says that it's phenomenal, so give it a read. Maybe you'll disagree.
My father has even read it, and he likes it.
There we go. I won over...
now I'm going to read it.
Oh, thank you. And I'm working on some new stuff as well. I've been writing. I will hopefully be performing a comedic essay in the near future. Yeah, just like me on Facebook, Twitter, follow me. I'm very funny.
And you can follow me at The Real Will Link. You can also listen to me every Tuesday at 4 p.m. on The PM Show with Larry Minetti at crntalk.com. I review movies not half as good as Roger Ebert, but I review movies there. And you can also read reviews and articles of mine on the website u1can.com, can, like the city in France. And I will be performing April 26th, The Pez Show, terrific personal essay show. I've got a very funny essay I'm reading about the one and only time I've been to a strip club. Trust me, come on down there, find The Pez Show on Facebook, reserve tickets.
It's a good one.
Good. On the show next week, we have a very funny stand-up comedian whose last name I am about to butcher.
I'm not even helping you this week.
Matt Ingebretsen.
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 That's a...
Yeah, it's Scandinavian.
That's a Scandinavian... A Scandi. I'm a Scandi.
Ingebretsen.
Pronunciation of that gibberish is in my blood.
Matt, you're personally offended.
How could you not know this?
Well, he's very funny. He also hosts a comedy show here in L.A. called Art Fuck, which I want to ask him about.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
Sounds like a great name.
I think it's what Tilda Swinton's doing in the box.
And so he's next week. And the week after that, we have Denise Gossett. And I've wanted to have her on for a while. She's the founder and director of this terrific horror film festival called Shriekfest. And she's going to tell us all about... the recent batch of submissions and get us prepared for this year's festival. It's going to be good. She's a great festival. We're going to talk about a great person. We're going to talk about some horror films. It's going to be great. So that's what we got coming up. If you like this week, we hope you keep on listening. Like we said, subscribe, like us on Facebook. And Siri, we can't thank you enough for coming out here tonight. Hope you had a good time.
Woo, I certainly did.
Excellent.
Certainly.
And on that note...
We're finished. The balcony is closed.